recent congressional testimony, the NYPD's Deputy Commissioner of Counterterrorism, Richard Falkenrath, said he goes to work every day worried that a bomb will be set off in the New York City subway system. Back in March, I spoke with Richard Esposito and Ted Gerstein, the authors of a new book called Bomb Squad. They spent a year on the job with the New York City Bomb Squad, the nation's most exclusive police unit. And I started out by asking Richard why the big explosions have been in Madrid and London and not in New York, if the subway system here seems to be such a major bombing target.
They have had the big explosions, and in Madrid, it had a political consequence. In London, it did not. And New York, although we have a much larger mass transit system than either of those cities, we've been very fortunate. And part of it is stopping bombs from coming in, because it's certainly very difficult to stop them from getting on.
So is that something that the people you were working with during your year with the bomb squad were aware of?
Oh, yeah. That was one of the things that was always on their radar. I mean, the thing that these guys are after is whatever's kind of put in front of them at the time. It's very interesting in the sense that if something was in the subways, that would be what was in front of them. If there was something out on Staten Island, that would be in front of them. They have a very kind of it's a short focus is a good way to describe it.
Now, this book, Ted, was inspired, as I understand it, by a Nightline program you both worked on about New York's bomb squad. As a producer for Nightline, you must come across many interesting topics that deserve in-depth coverage. Why did you decide to write a book about this one?
Well, the book itself came out of Rich and I did a lot of work at Ground Zero and kind of after 9/11 talking about the first responders. And this was the kind of the last piece that we did, the bomb squad. We spent a good couple months with them, following them around. And to everybody wants to know about these guys. You only see them kind of at the end of a long lens on the news. You only see them when something happens. And everybody had the same question, why do these guys do this? And that's what I think we tried to answer in the book and in the piece.
Because in some cases, their work could lead to certain death.
Absolutely. It's bombs are sexy. There's no way around it.
Now, Richard, how far back does the bomb squad go? 1903?
That's right. It's been a little over 103 years now. It's the oldest bomb squad in the United States and the oldest what's called a civilian bomb squad in the world. So it's been the model for many.
But despite that, they have also suffered casualties over the years, maybe not thousands, but they lost a couple of squad detectives to the IRA, and then later they lost two squad members to the in the Francis Tavern bombing in 1975.
While they've only lost six officers' lives, there's only been 225. It's a very small unit over the 103 years. And their injury rate is much higher than that. People who've either lost a finger or have suffered a brain injury, that's a bigger pool.
It's interesting because I talked to one of the bomb squad members and I asked him, how did your wife react when you joined the squad? It sounds very dangerous. And he said, she looked over the history. There have been, X many thousands of members of the NYPD, a couple hundred bomb squad members, six people have died. And, not to take away from the people that were injured, but it's actually a fairly low rate when you look at it.
And if you recall, Leonard, back in the 70s and 80s, nine police officers were getting shot and killed a year in other parts of the police department.
So it was safer to be in the bomb squad for a little time anyway. This is like
a different way.
It's like reading about a plane crash and being reminded that plane travel is the safest means of transportation. Of course, it's not so great if you're not in that plane. But the bomb squad makes 2,500 bomb runs a year, doesn't it? I guess most of those are false alarms?
Well, a bomb run is, it's many different things. We would be hanging out there. A lot of times you hang out and you see what happens, and there would be a call for something. And, nine times out of ten, it's nothing. It's a package by that's usually we'd hop in the van with them, go a couple blocks, and they'd get called off. These guys only get called at the end of a long chain of events.
And would it be likely that somebody with a grievance called an anonymous tip-in and said...
That's interesting. That's not as common in this area as it is in areas of, like, counterterrorism, where the FBI gets a lot of calls by people with a grievance.
Who want to make a point.
Who want to make a point or have a competitor academically in school or in business, and they say, this guy's attached to a radical group. people seem to really call in bombs when they think there's a bomb.
Uh-huh. And now I'm sure there are even more calls than usual because we're being reminded at airports and even on the subway that suspicious packages should be a matter of real concern.
Sure. And traditionally, after an event, it's always the numbers of calls go up. I mean, people just they open their eyes. And people in New York are generally very – they see something, they call in. You know, and there are. There's a chain of events. You know, the cop on the beat will see something. He'll call ESU. ESU will decide it's something. They'll call ahead. And eventually the bomb squad is, you know, I mean, there's a term that they often get referred to as last responders because there's the one at the end of the chain of events.
Now, how did you wind up being embedded with them? You know, embed right now may be a dirty word. People are always worried that that journalists lose a certain amount of objectivity. Was that a concern?
In this case, no. First of all, Ted and I have done a lot of pieces about working people, new police officers, new firefighters, construction workers. That's sort of what we do, have done for Nightline. They voted to have us in, and they had a say as to whether they talked to us or not, but they hadn't left us. The police department did not monitor our activities at all. There was no public information person. They just let us spend our year and a half with these guys and left it up to us to write about their activities.
My guests are Richard Esposito and Ted Gerstein, who have collaborated on a book called Bomb Squad. It is published by Hyperion, and it couldn't have come out at a more opportune time because we have this recent testimony from Commissioner Falkenrath, and then the former head of the CIA's now disbanded Osama bin Laden unit, Michael Scheuer, told MSNBC, in fact, just last month, that a regrouped al-Qaeda and Taliban are going to detonate a nuclear device inside the United States, and I'm sure that they were concerned about that. But how seriously should we take those things? Because, you know, there's been so much crying wolf. Could that have been a domestic version of the weapons of mass destruction scare, or do you think that it is likely that somebody is thinking of detonating a dirty bomb?
I'm sure someone's thinking of it. I'm sure New York or Washington would be the target they'd like. The reality is, as you've noticed, most suicide bombings, most bombings are much simpler than that. And they have a big enough consequence to satisfy these people. Dynamite can hurt a lot of people.
Fertilizer
can hurt a lot of people. So it's what the experts, you know, in Washington would call a low probability but high consequence event. Yes, they're concerned about it, but they've got other things to pay attention to every day.
Right. The one thing that we learned was the KISS philosophy is that's what the bomb squad keeps repeating over and over again. It's always keep it simple. Every device that they encounter, there's no elaborate switches and pumps and buttons. It's usually a fuse, you know, a simple fuse and a simple switch.
But after that alert, I understand that the bomb squad's commander, Jerry Pappy Sheehan, walked around with a briefcase cuffed to his wrist.
He did. Now, that was a different time. That was October 2001.
Oh, I can't keep all these alerts.
Yeah, and at that point, it was the early in the alert process, and the CIA was scouring the world for intelligence. So they found the source credible. Now, that's not the bomb squad's job. That's the CIA's job. So the bomb squad's job was to get ready for it. And the thing, from a bomb technician's point of view, a nuclear bomb is just a bigger bomb. The process of taking it apart is pretty much the same. Some special skills, but it's just got the same thing. Stop it before it goes off.
But they also know that if it's a nuclear bomb, that they're going to die. And didn't four of the squad's senior officers volunteer to disarm a device, knowing full well that it would almost certainly die?
They did. It's kind of interesting. They didn't. You know, they weren't going to die from the thing going off. Their concern was it wouldn't be shielded and they'd get radiation poisoning. That was the likely consequence. And yet, they volunteered. They had some tools that might limit some of that risk, but really they thought they could die from it, and yet they volunteered. It sort of speaks to the kind of people they are.
Well, we've heard about soldiers talking about life in Iraq where you're sitting around not doing anything, suddenly a call comes in, you get up, and you know that any moment after that you may die.
Well, it's interesting because that's, you know, I mean, as a journalist, you kind of put that on top of everything. But there is a little bit of that. You know, you'd sit around and I was sitting around one afternoon and, you know, a call came in and someone said, well, you know what, I'm about to eat my chili, but, you know, I'll take this one. And then the next one came in and, you know, the first one turned out to be nothing. The second one turned out to be a grenade in Staten Island. It was a live grenade. You know, nothing happened with it. It was fine. They disposed of it. But that's kind of the random nature of it.
Now, how would a live grenade even wind up in Staten Island? Did somebody try to explode it?
No, that's the thing. It's just, I mean, they deal with all these kind of random ticks of life. This was a live grenade. It was in the armory in Staten Island. No one knew how they got there, or no one fessed up to it, at least. And, you know, that's what they had to deal with.
It's surprising that the NYPD has a much more sophisticated unit than the federal government, doesn't it? As I understand it, the feds told the NYPD that they only had one team and one cutter trained to defuse any bomb.
To defuse that kind of nuclear radioactive device at the time.
Whereas the NYPD has a whole squad that can do it?
A whole squadron who could do it. But going back to something you said earlier, this alert fatigue, you know, aren't there so many of them? For these units that actually have to deal with it, they, just like the public, they have to sit there and not get fatigued, because even though 99% of it is not real, and some of it might be bureaucratic real, but, you know, they have to stay on their game and sort through that and say, okay, we have to take it seriously. So that's a challenge. How do you stay on top of your game with all of this pouring in?
Now, what were you doing? You were working alongside these guys?
We would go, you know, go. Basically, what you do is you go and you hang out. You have a cup of coffee, talk to them, argue, watch Fox, whatever's on. The call would come in, and they were nice enough to, you know, throw me in the back, you know, and tell me what's going on. And
now,
let me
somebody told me, hey, you can come along. There's a live bomb in Staten Island. I'm not sure that I'm going to say, oh, sure.
Well, they knew they didn't want the press of blowing up a journalist also. So they were smart enough to keep me in the back. And that's the thing is exactly what Rich was saying is, you know, these guys, they joke around, they have fun. But as soon as they get onto a device, onto what they suspect could be a bomb, it all turns very serious. It's, you know, everybody stays back. And that's what they want. They want minimum time with the device.
They also have a canine unit, don't they?
They do. And they like to say, you know, the joke is when they go out in public, they're viewed as the dog's handler. But they always point out that no dog could ever defuse a bomb. It's very handy before it's deemed a suspicious event. But once it's deemed suspicious, and it's different in different agencies, but here they say, okay, it's already suspicious. We don't need the dog. We're going to treat it like a bomb.
What can the dog do? It sniffs. I mean, a dog can't sniff uranium, can it?
They have very sensitive noses, and there's about 10,000 combinations that come from 8 broad categories. And they're trained on these categories. So if these scents are there, they're able to, and these are the scents that are in most explosives, they're able to identify them.
Are there certain breeds that are better for this kind
of
work?
It's a lab. They just love labs because of their temperament.
And, you know, they look great. The public loves them, too, as opposed to a German Shepherd, which is good for other things. But
yeah, German Shepherds used to be the dog that came to mind, but yeah. Labs are easier for them to sit around with when they're not out sniffing for bombs.
And they're also, you know, if you had to pick a warm and fuzzy dog, the lab is it. They also are really good at what they do. And the city gets them from pounds and prisoners that train dogs. They don't go out and spend a fortune on these, you know. They take dogs who might otherwise be put to death. You know?
Now, how are the 33 men on this elite NYPD PD team selected? Do they volunteer, or is this like detective work where somebody spots an up-and-comer?
It's a unit, and everybody, you know, it's one of the elite units in the NYPD. It's like ESU. It's like, you know, Bomb Squad is one of those, and that's what's something that people try to kind of strive towards. They try to get into. You know, it's interesting because a lot of times we'd go out with them, and they work very closely with the ESU guys, and a lot of the emergency services guys end up moving towards the Bomb Squad, and they have to be all kind of accepted. Everyone has to vote to get them in.
And I imagine they have to go through a fairly strenuous education process.
Yeah, I mean, we went down and spent part of the time there in a course. They start with 6 months of probation in the Bomb Squad. Then they go to Huntsville, Alabama for a 5-week basic course. Then they go back and do another year of following a senior guy, and then they keep getting retrained.
Now, why Huntsville?
Huntsville is where all the bomb technicians in America go to this one school. They get a common set. So, in fact, you could send a bomb tech from one city to another, and they would all have the same skill set, the same tools. It's called the Hazardous Devices School, and it's on that missile base, Redstone Arsenal, where America, after World War II, developed all its missiles. And now there's a military range for bomb technicians and one for what they call the civilian, the police and fire department squads.
There's actually, if I could plug our website, bombsquadbook.com, we have some clips from a Nightline piece we did where it shows what their training is. And they have an amazing setup there. They've got a little Ted Kaczynski shack. They've got a church. They've got a supermarket. Anything that any kind of, random place that you would leave a device.
My guests are Richard Esposito and Ted Gerstein. And they have collaborated on a book called Bomb Squad, which is published by Hyperion. We will continue our conversation after this. We're back with Richard Esposito, who covers Homeland Security and Criminal Justice for ABC News, and with Ted Gerstein, who has worked for World News Tonight and Turning Point for the past 10 years, has been a producer for Nightline. Together, they have worked on a number of stories, and the most recent one has led to a book. It's called Bomb Squad, A Year Inside the Nation's Most Exclusive Police Unit. It is published by Hyperion. These guys really have a complicated gear, don't they?
They have a pretty big kit. They have a 90-pound Kevlar suit.
This sounds like James Bond.
Some of the things are very simple, rope and pulleys, and some of the things are very complicated. Cannons that shoot water jets, big X-ray devices, trucks that X-ray things.
Now, do they only go out on bomb scares? What happens when something like the first attack on the World Trade Center occurs and there's a bomb? Are they brought in to figure out what happened?
They're brought in for the forensic part. Their work's, is crime scene work. In essence, they help the crime scene people, and they say, no, that's the signature of a bomb, and you should look for this kind of piece. Be careful to watch for this, because sometimes the evidence from a bomb wouldn't be apparent to another person. If you remember the Oklahoma City bombing, the office building, the people who were doing the work on that bomb forgot to take some of the evidence in before the night fell. It rained, and they lost almost all the residue, because that's what you need from a little scrap of metal, is some link between the person who blew up the thing and the explosive. So that's what they're trained to help with.
Didn't New York City miss an opportunity to learn lessons from the World Trade Center bombing of 1993?
Oh, I think so. I think if you read, there was a 170-odd page report on that event, and it spelled out very clearly communication problems, integrating different agencies that responded. And it was almost as if people read it, filed it, and forgot it, and never incorporated the recommendations.
Now, Rudy Giuliani was the mayor during that explosion as well. Most of us only remember what he did after 9/11. And some people put some blame for the problems of the investigation there on him.
I guess if we were political reporters, we'd look at that. We're not.
But the policemen talk.
Policemen talk, and the FBI handled that investigation. Where I would look at Rudy's performance would be, after that bombing, why would you put your emergency management command in the next building? So when the bombing occurred the second time, that whole command structure was gone.
He built the equivalent of a bunker in the World Trade Center, and that all disappeared, of course, with the destruction
right.
of it.
Right, and that's something to me that's a concrete event that you can ask a question about, say, why'd you do it?
So do we have any idea what the thinking was there? Did the bomb squad say, hey, we should not be doing this?
They weren't asked. The various people in the emergency community signed the lease fairly quickly, and that was an unusual thing to see the lease get signed so quickly. And since then, of course, the city has taken care to make sure those facilities are in different boroughs from Manhattan, outside of floodplains, and away from any symbolic targets.
So we have learned things from these terrible disasters, even probably more after 9/11, I imagine, Ted.
Well, they always, you know, I mean, the thing about these guys is they were down there immediately right afterwards. They were down there digging. They were down there with, you know, trying to get their, as a matter of fact, someone was, one of the members was killed. And yeah, absolutely. They take the same lessons that we all take from it. You know, I mean, it's funny because after Madrid, I was sitting in the squad, and one of the members kind of looked at me and said, you know, we need to find these, I need to find what happened in Madrid, because who knows, one of my guys could be down on a device exactly like that tomorrow.
And what are the lessons they learn? And they joke about this, like, you know how policemen can be cynical at times. It's like a bomb technician dies, they get a new piece of equipment. So two technicians got blown up by the FALN on New Year's Eve. Mayor Koch gave them robots. 1993, when things blow up, they're driving station wagons. The next year, they get vans. And 2001 happens, they've got 12 new trucks, 4 new robots, 3 new bomb suits. So they look at it as, hey, so every time we get hurt or someone gets hurt, they call the bomb squad and say, what do you need?
Now, we've heard a lot about physical problems suffered by people who were down at the World Trade Center site in the days following. Have we heard of any problems with members of the bomb squad?
Well, certainly we've seen some psychological problems. There's a trauma to losing your colleagues. There's a trauma to going out and doing a recovery of bodies. A couple of the people we've interviewed have had some real trauma that's taken them a long time to recover from. There's been some physical injuries. People were wounded. And those kinds of physical injuries, they haven't seen the kind of respiratory things in that squad that you've seen in firefighters and other rescue units.
A caller wants to know, was your work screened by any authorities in order to keep some of it confidential?
No, they were fairly free with letting us. You know, there was a level of trust. You know, Rich has a long history with the NYPD, and we had the Nightline pieces that were, you know, that were fairly straightforward. We're very honest with what we saw, and I think they trusted us.
We made a sort of commitment to ourselves and to them that, look, it's not complicated to make a bomb, but this isn't a book about making bombs. To answer on self-screening, we did not print recipes for making a bomb.
Well, anybody can look on the internet and get those
recipes. Mm-hmm. So why should we add to it, you know?
My guests are Richard Esposito and Ted Gerstein. They've written Bomb Squad. It's published by Hyperion. Richard, you cover Homeland Security for ABC. Has the creation of the Department of Homeland Security improved safety in New York, do you think?
No. I don't think it has added a great deal up till now. It's certainly helped with funding. It's certainly helped with some other issues. But no, fundamentally, I'd say no.
In fact, Lieutenant Mark Torrey, the current bomb squad commander, has said virtually every dollar spent on Homeland Security has been a dollar wasted. Well, that's
Mark's referring
very sad
to the billions and billions of dollars that have been spent on hardening physical targets, most of which will never need to be hardened. There's you know, political pork played. Mayor Bloomberg has said this, not just the lieutenant, but the mayor and the police commissioner. It's like, hey, we need money for intelligence gathering. We don't need money to secure a garage somewhere. And you know, every political base got some of this money. And Mark's right. Billions have been wasted.
Well, to some degree, it reminds me of when I was a kid in school, and there were these atomic alerts, and we would climb under our desks and cover our heads as though that was going to protect us against an atomic bomb.
Well, that's the dogs now. A lot of times they complain about, you know, every time something happens, we need dogs there. We need 7 dogs there. When I was, we spent New Year's Eve with them, and, you know, they got a call, we need the dogs to go sweep the garage. What does that mean, sweep the garage? You know, they weren't securing the garage afterwards, so these poor dogs had to go smell every single car, and they got exhausted. And, you know, basically they were wiped for the next 2 hours after that. So it's a lot of what they do get is, you know, people getting a concern and calling up.
Reassurance.
Do they feel frustrated in not being consulted about what really should be done? Because they probably know more about what should be done and what shouldn't be done than practically anyone else in America.
You know, they'll go, everyone's an expert. And, you know, you've seen the experts on TV. I'm an expert in, you know, explosive devices, one person will say. Then I'm an expert in intelligence. Then something really happens in England, and the last person they call is the first person. The English bomb technician's first call will be to the guys in the other bomb technician outfits because they want you to know what happened on their subway. And they're sometimes the last people consulted on what should we do. And so that's their, you know, everybody's an expert. There's, you know, break glass, call bomb squad is what they say, yeah, and then put us back.
They call themselves a very expensive insurance policy. No one really wants to have them around until something happens, and then they're the first call.
Well, is there also an intelligence unit out there? Because they believe that intelligence is really important.
New York City has what I think. First of all, it's very big. There's over 1,000 police officers just doing intelligence work.
Although
in
some
New York.
People think that some of it is misdirected as well, as we saw during the Republican convention and a few other instances recently.
Historically, there's always been that tension. And historically, as you know better than most people, there has been some misuse of intelligence, whether by the FBI or back in by the NYPD in the 60s and other police departments. So that said, they also do a great deal and a great deal more than any other agency to try to monitor real threats. And that means less things get to a level where the bomb squad has to, like, scramble.
Go ahead.
No, they... It's interesting because they do. They get out at the end of something. And to them, it's one of the first things they complained about when I was hanging out with them in Times Square was the intelligence, is they never hear from anything. But at the same time, they're the ones that just go out. They're very focused on just the devices in front of them. They tend not to follow up. You know, they are detectives in the sense that that's what their rank is in the department. But they don't follow up. There's other departments that'll do the cleanup and the kind of the forensics.
Isn't part of the problem that tactics constantly change? We've been seeing in Iraq that every time the military adjusts to some insurgent's tactic, they come up with a new one. I just read about another one today in the New York Times. Now, I would think that the bomb squads have to be aware of that as well, that they're always solving the last problem, not the next one.
Yes and no. While the tactics have changed in Iraq, all the devices are ones that have been used before. So whether it's explosively formed projectiles or plates under roads that blow up cars, that's been seen in Afghanistan, in Lebanon. So bomb technicians know what they're looking at. I mean, one of the problems in Iraq, as opposed to in a city, is it's a military situation. So they don't have the luxury of waiting for a bomb squad to go take a look. The people go out there and whatever, and they have to try and anticipate tactics in a combat thing. It's a little different.
Do they have any sense of where an attack might take place? I could imagine a Times Square kind of situation, the Empire State Building, but the subways have been very effective in London and Madrid.
Sure. Mark says that, Mark talks about, a bomb is a very political thing, and really it's any device anywhere going off will get the point across, whether it's It could be a small thing. It could be, a dirty bomb.
Because it makes a dramatic point.
Right. That's the whole point, is to make the point.
And kills people.
Right. So a little thing goes a far amount.
The targets are so obvious that every politician has ticked them off. Symbolic targets,
Yet we've had this debate in Congress over whether money should be allotted to Omaha, Nebraska. I don't mean to pick on Omaha, Nebraska, but any number of places where I can't imagine a terrorist would think, I really want to explode a bomb in...
If you have a choice between the Empire State Building and
Right, and Casper, Wyoming.
If you're going to blow something up in Spain, what better than the Madrid train station? London, what better than the London tubes? What resonates globally, what is America? New York, Washington, maybe Los Angeles? Those are the things that will get what they want out, which is a message.
And there are a lot of people in New York who are really frightened by this whole thing, who feel that they should leave because of that. We got a listener email wondering what the safest part of the subway is. Where should one sit in the subway? I know people argue over where you should sit in an airplane.
I ride the number 4. So,
I'll sit next to you if you got any tips.
Look, people might be leaving, but people are coming to New York, and you've been through scares here. People want to leave. Somebody else wants to come. The city pretty much seems to have gone on through all. People forget 380 bombings in 1 year in New York at one point, and everybody went to work.
Right. We have pictures of, there was this Sunday bomber in the 50s, and he, exploded something on the Staten Island Ferry. Next day, people were back on the ferry. You know, it takes a lot to really disrupt people's lives.
And there was a guy who was bombing telephone booths.
Yeah, and
well, there was the Mad Bomber, and the Mad Bomber was right before the Sunday Bomber. I mean, and that's the thing that the squad deals with. Their strategies change on the dime. You know, it could be in the 50s and 60s, it was these kind of individual lone bombers. After that, it was turned into the political bombers.
And the book is Bomb Squad, A Year Inside the Nation's Most Exclusive Police Unit. It is published by Hyperion, and actually, you have made me feel just a little safer. And I don't know whether I should feel safe.
No, that's what I kind of took out of this book, is I actually I do feel better knowing these guys are out there.
It's a pretty safe city we live in, New York.
Thank you both so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.